todo el mundo.
But this was really
1981.
Welcome to the Rock and Roll Nightmares podcast. I'm your host, Stacey Lane Wilson, author of the Rock and Roll Nightmares book series and director of the documentary The Ventures, Stars on Guitars. This is your destination for all things rock, where the interviewees include musicians, authors, historians, filmmakers, and more. And now, on to the show. Welcome to the Rock and Roll Nightmares podcast. I've got a special shorter episode for you today featuring the creative minds behind becoming Led Zeppelin. As a lifelong Zeppelin fan who grew up devouring everything I could find from books to bootlegs to MTV interviews, this film has been on my radar ever since it was in pre-production. I recently had the chance to speak with director Bernard McMahon and his co-writer and co-producer Allison McGordy during a Sony Pictures Classics press junket. After catching a special IMAX sneak preview for the film, which I reviewed for Culture Sonar, I had some thoughts about certain creative choices, particularly the psychedelic treatment of the concert footage, which honestly left me with a bit of a headache. When I brought this up with them, their explanation really opened my eyes, and I think you'll find it fascinating too. While there's plenty more to discover about the making of Becoming Led Zeppelin, I want to quickly share some exciting news. The film has shattered records in its opening weekend, pulling in 3 million across IMAX theaters in 16 countries. Here in the States, it brought in 2.6 million. The biggest opening weekend ever for an IMAX exclusive music release. Major congratulations to Bernard and Allison on this achievement. Now, let's dive into the interview. Hi, Bernard. Hi, Allison. Welcome. As you can see, I have a Jimmy Page Dan Electro guitar here and a Jack White airliner up on my office wall.
Do?
Yes. Jack White and Jimmy Page. I got to interview them both for It Might Get Loud.
Oh, how wonderful.
My two favorites, yes. So I had to.
We've worked with both of those people too. So our first
fantastic.
Were American Epic, and they were on the first blues gospel country records made. And Jack White was in the fourth film of that.
Fantastic.
Some of the best performances he's ever done on filmed.
I need to watch that.
Okay. Yeah.
We'll send you the links.
There would be no Led Zeppelin film without those movies. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Robert Redford.
Talk about the performances in Becoming Led Zeppelin, because it shows the concert footage that you guys unearthed. It really shows their sonic power. Some of the visuals are very psychedelic with zooms and superimposed imagery and wild colors. I'm wondering if that's something that you guys did in post, or was it already pre-edited in the 60s?
No, we put it together. Yeah, I mean, there's a few original in-camera shots with that effect, I think one. But yeah, we're huge fans of like the golden era of Hollywood. And so we love like all the montage work, you know, and so whether it's even going back to Abel Gance's Napoleon from 1927 or Frank Capra. You know, we love visual storytelling.
And we reference a lot of those techniques with
Yeah.
it. So all the montage work and everything you see with tickets dropping, for example, newspapers will be, that's all,
Posters.
yeah, that posters, that's all filmed.
Yeah, and there are reasons to
Yeah.
see it really in the cinema. I mean, apart from the sound is like, we'll come into that in a minute, but visually, there's not a single frame that hasn't been very carefully thought through in this film as to what's on that frame. So the more that you look on what's going in there, the more there's there. So let's just say there's a newspaper story and it's just saying, with all these things, it says Zeppelin are going back to tour the US. If you look at what the article is that's right next to it will have some massive relevance to the story. It'll be like how Terry Reid, his career is going down the tank, the guy that didn't do the Led Zeppelin gig, you know? So there's all this stuff in there that basically, you
Yeah,
know.
and I think there's so many multiple layers of storytelling there that this is why people are going so many times to see it. We went to the IMAX in New York last night and met people that was on their fourth screening already, and it's only been out for 6 days. And
Yeah.
yeah, because there's so many different layers within a story within a story.
Yeah.
Yes, and how about the sound for IMAX?
And then there's the
Well, that's
sound, you know, in terms of the sound, what you're hearing basically that this is the pure sound of Led Zeppelin in 69. So the studio recordings, you're hearing, you know, Robert Ludwig's lack a cut of that album too, you know, which is with all the techniques that were used sonically at that time. So there is, you know, all contemporary films now are compressed. They're like sonically like a soap bar. This is like massive dynamics in this film, really high highs and quiet moments. And so the dynamic range of this film is like enormous. And that's what Led Zeppelin are dealing with, is the dynamics. So you're basically hearing Zeppelin's music exactly as it was intended to be heard in 69, the day it was released in the what we consider to be the very best version we can find of how, you know, that a particular engineer managed to put that onto vinyl. And similarly with all the music that leads up to it. So in the theater, what you're hearing is you're literally hearing the sound of Zeppelin in 69 as it's meant to be heard. And we're not messing with that, you know, at all. We're giving it to you pure. So that is literally like the pineapple on the tree in Kauai. It's being cut off, cut in half, and then put in front of you to eat it. There's
Gosh.
nothing done to it. And that's hard to pull off in films, but that's why people are connecting with it, is because the sound isn't being adjusted to appeal to a younger generation. It's like, no, this is Led Zeppelin. This is like freaking masterpiece stuff, you know. Don't need to mess with it. You know, all we do is with some of the live performances, that was a bit of a rush job back in 69. We may have to give a little bit of EQ help, you know, to with that. But other than that, it is absolute purity.
Where did you find all that rare footage?
There wasn't a lot when we started. Peter Grant, if he found, caught somebody filming the concert, he would rip the film out of the camera, smash the camera, throw the filmmaker out the venue. So it took a while to find a lot of the stuff that you see on there, and we did that with some help from the fan base who pointed us in some directions.
Yeah.
But it took a long time, and then we'd get it, scan it at the highest we could,
Well,
and
everything
move.
is original
Yeah.
elements in here. It's within our power. I mean, we searched almost everywhere bar the Mariana Trench to find the original negatives, the original tape, if it was originally shot to tape. But we've left no stone in our hands and transferred on what we know to be the best equipment on planet Earth. And then to give it to the viewer in the freshest possible form. And I think in
And we
terms of
want it to be as pure as possible. That's why it's just told in the band members' voices and the no other commentators putting in
yeah,
their opinions. So it's just
them telling the story because they never done it before. But keep in mind, there are 175 background research interviews that were done to corroborate what is on the screen. So, you know, we interviewed, you know, the guy that and became friends with the guy that taught Jimmy his first two guitars, chords on his guitar. All the engineers that worked with him, the studio producers that hired them. I mean, we've met all these
And all
people, you know?
Robert's friends, school friends and ex-bandmates. We spent a lot of time in the West Midlands where Robert and John Bonham are from.
I've developed these lovely conversations with the 95-year-old Bishop Gordon Bates, who is the one that allowed John Paul Jones to be an organist and choir master in his little church at 14. I've tracked him down. John hadn't seen him since probably 1961. He's still
It's like
alive.
archaeology.
Yeah, totally. So all that background research is in the film. So yes, they are telling the story in their own words, but their story is backed up by 175 interviews of people that are corroborating what you're hearing on the screen is their memory of it too, you know?
Yeah,
So.
well, I was gonna say that it's kind of mind-boggling that this is the first official Led Zeppelin documentary because they are one of the most popular bands in the world, so beloved. What do you think was the holdup? Why did it take so long to get someone that they approved of?
I don't think they intended ever to make a documentary. I think
No.
it was when we came to them, we'd done so much. First of all, we'd done so much preparation. We spent 7 months researching, writing a script, preparing a storyboard, and we were coming off the back of American Epic, which they loved. And so I think it was just what, like, for,
It
timing.
was chance. They were admirers of
This
the
is the
American epic
world.
films. And so this is kind of a wonderful place to start.
So,
But then we're arriving, and the messages is that, we were just very prepared.
and
We had worked out exactly what the film you see on the screen is, and we'd put it down in a storyboard. So what you're watching was all worked out and prepared in advance. So when we were meeting with them, and the meetings were between 5 and 7 hours long, it was apparent to them that we'd really thought about this and worked this out. And what was amazing was after they'd fired a few trick questions at us just to make sure we knew the subject,
like for example,
I should have said to Jimmy, I said, well, this is the point where you see Robert Plant singing for the first time, and he
he
said,
said, "What was the name of the group that Robert was in?"
and I was like, Obs Tweedle.
Very good. Carry on.
So,
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah, well, when I interviewed Jimmy Page, it's been a couple of times, but only at brief press events. So I'm really curious to know what it was like to get that deep dive into all of the guys' personalities. What kind of impression did they leave on you both? Incredibly nice and intelligent and thoughtful. And that message at the end of the film that, Bernard asked him,
Oh, Jimmy, what's your
Jimmy.
message to kids out there? What do you learn from this story? And he closes the film, and that's the really the summation of the movie. If you have something in yourself that you think is different, you've got to work and work and work and work at
And
it.
stay true.
But if you can stay true, your aim is true. It means avoid being pushed around and corrupted
Distracted,
and distracted.
distracted.
If your aim is true, you can achieve your dreams. I believe that because this is what happens. And that is the message of the film to kids. It's like, you can do this. You do not, if you don't sit on your hands, you work hard, you take every opportunity to do whatever it is in whatever capacity you can, and you learn from each and every one of those situations, that moment, and it will happen one day.
Is this a film you've always wanted to make?
Here in this case, we got an opportunity to sit down with these guys. You grab that, you pool all the work you've done, and chances are people will go, okay, we're interested, and this is what happened here. That my sense was there was never a plan for there to be any kind of film at all. It just happened. It was the right thing at the right time.
What's that
That
saying? Fortune favors the brave as well.
fortune favors the
Oh, and
brave.
the
It was like
ruthless.
people coming in with work that we'd spent 10 years making on American
American
Epic they
Epic.
respected, and then coming in with something that had been they knew we'd done a huge amount of costly work to put together, and that there was a respect for that, and that's something that everybody can do. You can learn from that. It is nothing special with us. It's just we did that work. But there were the couple of people we mentioned it to went, "You're crazy. They'll never agree. You're mad doing all that work." But we ignored them. And similarly with the film itself, when we initially made the rough cut of the film, we were showing it to people. Apart from Sony Pictures Classics, who put this film out, every single studio was like, "Nobody will watch this film." And
They
we're saying, "What do you mean? Is nobody's gonna watch full
don't.
songs in a cinema being played of Zed Zeppelin? It's not gonna happen." So no one would sign the movie. And so apart from this
And it's
company,
already made box office history for
I
IMAX as
saw that.
it's
Yeah,
less than
congrats.
half. Yeah, and it's only been 6 days. So
Wow. Well, that's fantastic. Well, thank you so much for being on the Rock and Roll Nightmares podcast. It was a pleasure to speak with both of you, and
I hope this was a dream
congratulations.
rather than a nightmare.
This concludes another episode of the Rock and Roll Nightmares podcast. Remember, there's a book series too. All the books are available in paperback, ebook, and audio via Amazon or the Rock and Roll Nightmares website. That's ROCK-N-ROLL-Nightmares.com. Our official theme song is She's Out for Blood by Fuzzbuster, founded by Lars Cabot. Thank you for listening.